This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 14, entitled Twice as Far. What'd you think of this episode?
Whew, this episode really backed into one of the greatest of all time, in my opinion. And
one of the most fun. I don't know if it's a great episode.
Great is subjective, but I'm saying, like,
from
shocking, entertaining, swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
Using my own prejudices about the show and its characters against me to really set me up for an epic rope-a-dope.
Okay, we're going, like, to have to explore that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Just that I was, like, beside myself with the shit that Denise was saying and her actions. And as I was working myself into, I can't fucking believe this, she takes an arrow through the eye, which pretty much ends her career as adventurer.
It stops you from thinking about it, because if you think about this episode a little too long, you start to notice the cracks.
Okay.
A lot more. And that's, like, on second viewing,
interesting. I thought it held up pretty
well. The second viewing didn't service me as a viewer very well, because I already knew the exciting parts that were coming, and I was paying more attention to why these people were doing the things they're doing. Some of it makes sense. Some of it is just fucking insanely stupid.
Now, I don't know what to say about the Carol stuff, because that's the stuff that still has me scratching my head. I mean, Surgeon General warning, smoking is a leading cause of rampant morgulizing. Is the only thing I can think of. But
right.
And I don't know why they're doing this. I don't understand what Carol's doing, but they could be setting this up for some kind of epic redemption arc with Morgan, which I would enjoy. So I think there's a lot to criticize, but I kind of feel like I need to withhold it to see where they're going with it. Because, you know, that's one thing that I think that the you know, if we're the haters, the lovers have said consistently is, you know, you can't judge normal people's actions and morality because they're in a zombie apocalypse, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Which I dismiss a lot, but I think that there is some truth to that. Like, this could be a... you know, if you're not afraid to die out in the wilderness because you've been out there and survived before, and you find that you just have lost your appetite for killing, and that loving people and having to be their protector, the necessary result of that is killing, maybe it would be logical to go walk the earth, Jules style.
Yeah, and she has also bigger reasons for doing it, for leaving the camp that we'll talk about kind of when we get there at the end of this recap, but... I don't know. I know I've said in the... It feels like she has taken too much of a turn. Like, I've said in the past, look, they... Something doesn't feel right about the turn that Carol has taken.
Yeah.
I do kind of like how they were leading up to it. But there's something at the beginning where it felt like it was kind of all of a sudden that she started having these questions. And now there's something at the end of that arc where it feels like she's gone too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
That I don't like. It doesn't feel natural to me. It doesn't feel like a character who is a cold, hard killer.
I agree.
For good reasons.
I agree. I wonder, it feels to me like there might be a step or two missing.
Yeah. Or if they had her just, like, a little bit more moderate in her position, not, like, going full Morgan at the end of this.
Yeah, I wonder... You know, Melissa McBride, she's one of the few last remaining Darabont... faithful.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, I, in a way that, like, I don't know that, The guy that plays Rick, who's
Andrew Lincoln.
Andrew Lincoln.
Oh man, you're gonna get emails.
No
well,
shit,
I'm gonna get emails about that.
Deservedly so. I just brain fart. Sure, in a way that I don't think that he is. I can't think of anything else that he's actually been in Darabont. And I wonder if she's like, I'm not renewing my contract.
Maybe.
Which Maybe. Would give them a single season to give her a satisfying exit to the show. And I'm not saying this is not inside information. This is just my speculation trying to figure out why. It could just be that this is, I mean, you know, six episodes into a fairly entertaining back half, I feel like I'm maybe giving it too much credit. But it's also not unprecedented for the show to just botch a character arc.
Sure.
And it's a little jarring because I think they've done such a great job with Carol.
Yep, we have a lot of feedback on Carol, and I plan on discussing it in a lot of depth.
I wonder why we didn't think this when she became the prison killer in season three. Or was that four?
There are a lot of reasons.
Part of it is because there was a time jump there. Part of it was because there was a little bit of a mystery about who did it. Mm-hmm. So like we kind of had a way to mentally make peace with the fact that she was the killer before it was revealed that she was the killer.
Right, that helped.
And I don't know that was a deliberate storytelling trick, but it don't hurt.
Yeah.
But if there are a few pieces missing, I wonder if there's some behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't know about it and why they're having to accelerate her character to an exit. Again,
maybe
that's
seems
not
like
spoilers. That's just pure speculation based on me knowing that she's been in at least one other movie to Frank Darabont helm.
Right. The Mist?
The Mist or Fog?
The Fog?
It's the one about the giant spider creatures in the fog.
Right.
Whatever that one is.
Uh-huh. She gets trapped with Dale in a grocery store.
Horrific, horrific story.
Yeah. Okay, should we get to the recap? Because there's a lot more I want to say about Carol, but we need to kind of get to that and save it for feedback as well.
We start daily life in Alexandria montage, where we just see people relieving each other and walking around the lake, and Rick swings by Morgan's prison as he's putting the finishing touches on it and is like, why?
Morgan's looking around like he almost didn't realize that he accidentally built a cell around himself.
Oh, shit,
how am I going to get out of here?
Rick, I left the keys outside. And he asks why, and he says to give you choices for next time, which seems to satisfy Rick. And again, I'm not a huge fan of Morgan's arc here, but it's probably a good idea to have a prison in a community.
Right. I think this is the best place for Morgan to land because he's going to contribute. He's going to help, even if he can't kill.
Then for every day in this montage, the camera makes a jump to hyperspace. Such a weird effect.
What did
to
you think
suggest
of that?
I thought it was shitty.
Me too. I didn't like anything about that transition.
I don't know how else you suggest the passage of time, like
night
you know,
to day cycle.
I would think,
although in The Walking Dead, I don't know if that's passage of time or not.
It seems like it'd be a good place for a Breaking Bad style sunrise sunset montage,
right,
and then the next day
time lapse.
But whatever, you know, we make the jump to light speed, and the next day, what's this? Eugene wearing pants?
Sasha's noticing.
I'm noticing. Big fan of the pants move. Tobin kissing Carol goodbye. Not as big a fan.
Yep.
Rosita looking forlorn, and I'm like, oh man, she's like really dealing with the breakup of Abraham. And then we see the lump in a bed, whose name is Spencer. And
which
I'm
is
like,
really
oh,
all he is.
That's why she looks so depressed.
Yeah,
she's God, fucking this guy. Daryl's got his bike back, and he has a Beetle Bailey-esque toy soldier in a satchel bag, which I guess is Primo's. What the fuck? Do you have any idea of what the significance of that is?
Why he cares? No.
Well, I don't. It's not that Daryl cares, but it's like it was just. I feel like we're supposed to take something away from that. Like maybe the idea that maybe Primo was in a similar way that Rick might see a comic book and bring it back for Carl, or if someone saw a toy, they might bring it back for kid. Like suggesting that maybe Primo's got a kid. Another hint that maybe not all saviors are bad.
Yeah, maybe.
But he's pretty much, you know, what the fuck. Carol, and here's the thing. This talks with Carol and Daryl mean something and are supposed to mean something, but I'm not getting it. They share a cigarette in this significant moment, and she says, "You saved him. That's who we are. That's we're still stuck with that." And he's like, "No, we ain't. I should have killed him."
Yeah, I mean, it definitely shows a divide in their thinking, right? I mean,
he's going the other way. Like, yeah. I'm tired of saving randos. And that's something that he's talked with Rick about. So that's I understand that part.
Totally.
But then
But I think Carol is, like, kind of looking to him to sort out some of her problems, but he's not giving it back at this point, right? Like, whereas she was trying to help him through all his stuff and kind of work through it together, he's kind of not on board with that.
Yeah, Daryl's not a certified counselor or licensed marital family therapist.
It's the wrong
Carol.
Place to look, Carol.
Yeah.
Go to Denise.
I mean, he's not
maybe
even...
keep her off the road.
Sure.
Talk to her for a while.
He didn't ask the ones that took you and Maggie, what did they do to you? And I guess, is that supposed to suggest that Daryl has seen the change in Carol and he misattributes to some mistreatment? And she says, us? They didn't do anything.
Right. I think he's thinking like a Maggie sort of thing after the governor.
Is that supposed to imply that Carol thinks they shouldn't have killed those people? Because they didn't really do anything to them?
I think
that they wouldn't have done themselves in their position?
I think so. The moralizing is getting to her.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. It seems like the tonic to all this is, like, these guys tried to jack you at gunpoint at the side of the road. Mm-hmm. Like... You know, they're admittedly, even the redhead that you're feeling so bad about killing, she admits to being a bad girl, a bad dude, a bad woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why this is, again, you know, killing 18 and now, you know, several dozen people, I get that that is psychotic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably do some bad things to you, but I don't understand why she's suddenly having a problem with it.
Right.
There's something about Sam and something about Morgan and something about this experience with this kinder, gentler savior branch that's messing with her. And I haven't quite connected the dots.
I think she needs to read the same game theory books that Eugene's been reading. Like, adapt to the world,
you mean
Carol.
Dungeons & Dragons 3rd edition?
Well, he's specifically been reading, like, game theory, like the different stages of adapting to the environment and then pressing your advantage and changing the environment to yourself.
Oh, see, I'm not... Like, I'm not up on my Richard Nash, my game theory.
Right.
My mind's not
game
that
theory
beautiful.
Is a much bigger
sure.
thing.
Sure.
But I mean, if she wants to talk with someone, talk with him, because he seems to have the antidote for the moralizing, I think.
Mm. Got to adapt.
Road forward.
So where was I at here? Oh, and then they begin... and end the episode with this creaking, smoking porch swing motif.
Yeah.
And I don't also know the significance of that, other than it just bookends, you know, her decision-making process and somehow ties Morgan into it, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, later.
Yeah, I think it's just a stand-in for, you know, what Carol's feeling, what she's thinking. I mean, these cigarettes clearly represent some sort of guilt on her part. She just started smoking them since she's been killing people and feeling bad about it, and since Morgan's been on her back... I think it serves a dual purpose for them both.
Tell me we have some brilliant listener feedback that explains all this.
The swing?
This whole Carol thing. We got some good takes on that.
We have some takes on it. We have some takes
then.
That encourage discussion and do have some finer points. I wanted to talk a little bit about like the intro music for this show, the theme song.
Okay.
It's real weird. The theme song implies something very dramatic, right? It's a very dramatic song.
Sure.
Coming out of just a porch swing and kind of a happy... Like, everybody in town, except for maybe Carol, is feeling pretty good about town right now. And, well, I mean, except for Rosita. Rosita and Carol, not feeling good about it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a fairly upbeat... As upbeat as The Walking Dead gets.
Mm-hmm.
Intro, and then you go into this real dramatic theme song. It's a weird, jarring.
That bites everybody.
Feeling. I know. How do you?
Because I remember
you can't have the same feeling, the same tone in every intro.
Like I think of like some of the crazier musical intros for Breaking Bad that then goes into
right.
And it's like, you know, what are you going to do? You hit a musical wall
I know.
80 miles an hour. It's you get vaporized.
It sucks. I'm not saying, you know, shame on you for doing this Walking Dead. It just struck me this episode.
I feel like, you know, some shows do that better than others. Like, I just got done watching Community, and they just went with it, man. Like, if they had no fear for changing up their theme sequence and music, if it would prop up the show better.
Well, their branding was terrible. Maybe that's why they were canceled 9 times.
Still, they get 6 seasons and probably a movie, which is their goal. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Denise is studying a crumpled flyer and also looking kind of forlornly out the gates towards a zombie who's had an unfortunate dental experience.
Oh, man, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because it's not just the fact that he's got this rebar through his cheek. It's just, I'm just imagining, you know, again, zombies are not feeling anything. But imagine that rebar just scraping on your teeth and...
Uh-huh. Pulling at your
poor guy's
face skin.
Got any fillings, they're going to be like twinging and twanging. But it turns out that this is a flyer that's going to be a map to an apothecary. Did I pronounce
there
it correctly?
You go.
I've been practicing.
You got it.
Practicing all
in
morning.
In the mirror.
In front
apothecary.
Of the mirror. Yep. Spencer tries to invite Rosita over for his infamous or maybe famous beef jerky stroganoff. And then he asked the question that no man should ask a crazy hot murderer in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Can we, like, define the relationship?
Don't question it, man. Just go with it.
Yeah.
Ride that thing into the ground.
This is like the dew on a spider web. If the bright sunlight hits it, it's just going to evaporate. What the fuck are you doing?
Yep. Take a picture.
I get that you're, like, generically Tiger Beat cover hot, but... There's not that many Rositas walking around. Hello?
That's very true.
Jesus, what is he doing, man? Denise makes it clear that she didn't overhear any private things that they were saying, which Rosita's like, whatever. And
She did. She heard him.
Sure.
Heard him, and that's part of why she's doing this.
Rosita wants to resume their machete lessons, I'm guessing, and she goes, no, actually, I want to do something different. There's this Edison's boutique and apothecary, and I want to check it out because, you know, it could be drugs.
Could be.
I hear Edison's boutique and apothecary, and I, apothecary, Jesus Christ.
Don't do it.
It's already fucked up.
APO.
The APO, and I'm thinking, like, that probably has as much to do about a pharmacy as, like, anthropology has to do with, like... digging up human remains Indiana Jones style. Like, that's not the name of a place that deals... They might have bath salts. They might have, quote-unquote, spice. You might be able to get a couple hits of salvia, but you're not going to fucking get penicillin or OxyContin. No, that's not the place you go to.
It has, like, small tincture jars with, like... goat hair or...
You might be able to get essential oils.
A dried out monkey's paw in them or something.
You might be able to get supplies to make bath, you know, soaps.
Right.
And fragrances and some incense holders.
And lava lamps, come on.
Lava lamps, you'd be able to get lava lamps. Maybe some cheap fetish gear.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find actual pharmaceutical grade product.
That's what I think too, but apparently we're both wrong.
Maybe that's an East Coast thing. They don't call their pharmacies, they call them apothecary things.
Yep.
But she and you know, Daryl and Rosita are like, fine, we'll check it. She's like, nope, I want to go. The standard 3-year-old argument of I want to do it. And thus begins my very guilty hate of Denise this episode.
Yeah, no, not hate of Denise. Denise, fine, whatever. She wants to go do the thing, let her. But there should be people, there should be grown-ups in this situation saying no.
Mm.
Like, no, Denise, you're not. I wish Rick was around to shut this shit down because it wouldn't have happened under his watch.
Because any other dumb fucking Alexander says this, like, fine, whatever, come with us. You need to fight or die. This is your only person with any medical knowledge at all.
Yep.
That most of it has been hard fought through experience in the last several weeks. Don't fuck up this good thing.
And they're going to get medical supplies, so they probably need a doctor to use them when they get back.
And ostensibly, she's doing this so the next time Tara goes out on 2-week raid, she can go with her. Fuck all that. You're on call 24/7. You never get to leave.
Right. Right. Somebody gets a laceration back in town and you're out on a field trip.
Yeah.
What are they going
to
do?
Suddenly you are the president of the United States and, like, you need a ring of protection around you. Nothing bad can happen to you. I don't understand.
Right. And
I don't understand.
Later.
She's smart enough and self-aware enough and I think selfless enough to understand that. So her long speech in the middle, which gets interrupted by a crossbow bolt, didn't land for me. And
no,
you know,
me either. And that's one of the places where this episode really falls apart is just the premise that they would, that A, she would think of going out there.
Yes.
And B, that they would allow it to happen. I mean, she says she's going to go anyway.
I guess, fine, sure.
But that's on you. We can't take that chance.
That's where you twist her arm, you shove her in Morgan's jail and says, we'll be back when we let you know whether there's stuff in this
right
boutique. I don't know. And I appreciate that Rosita and Daryl both put up resistance to it. But again, she's the only – and I kind of can squint and see where Denise would say this, like on week two of the 2 week – like, you know, she's really worried about Tara. She's this, right. I'm not saying yeah. I love you back to her is really weighing heavily on her mind. But you just can't let that happen, man. The stakes are too high. And I thought we'd kind of move past this, allowing rookie survivor childlike behavior to jeopardize the safety of the overall group.
Right. It's a greater good sort of thing. If she goes out and finds some drugs, or if she becomes like a field agent or whatever, where she can go out, that's fine, but we have so many field agents. You are going to, over the years, over the 30-plus years that Abraham mentions, be able to do so much more for this community if you just stay safe.
You're the one person who doesn't have to go out and, in fact, should never go out. Like, if you're holding the gun and shooting, it's because you're literally the last person standing in Alexandria.
And maybe Patricia. I don't think she has any business going out.
Sure. But she could take a bullet for Denise.
Sure.
And she fucking should.
Meat shield.
Anyway, I'm going to keep moving before I say something insensitive. So we get to now one of the most unrealistic scenes in the Walking Dead show history. Daryl Dixon, backwoods savant, motorcycle aficionado, cannot operate a stick shift vehicle. What the fuck am I seeing?
He's letting off the clutch too late or too early. He's disengaging.
Do they not understand that a motorcycle, I mean, there might be one or two examples of an automatic motorcycle that some, you know, dude that rides a trike might ride.
I've never heard
of them. But essentially, a motorcycle is a stick shift vehicle that's flipped. You work the clutch with your hand and you work the gear shift with your foot.
Right.
So if you can do the upside down version of something, I'm pretty sure you can do the right side up one.
To him, that would be the right side up version. The car will be upside down, but it doesn't matter. The concept of disengaging the clutch too early or whatever should be very familiar to him.
Yes, the timing and all that. It made me visibly angry.
It felt to me like they were trying to do another Rick with his music, like the road trip, the Rick and Daryl road trip scene, just kind of a ha-ha, have fun moment.
Yeah.
Which they just didn't care to say, hey, this guy knows a lot about manual transmissions,
if they want to make
a guy who fucking repairs manual transmissions all day long.
Sure. But again, does no one on the show ride a motorcycle?
Maybe not.
I'm pretty sure Norman Reedus does. I've seen him ride one on the show.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, guys, you know, I'm not a rider or nothing, but I don't know. If they want to make that gag, just have Daryl sitting in the middle, which would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Daryl riding in the middle seat.
Denise.
With Rosita and Denise, and he's like, hey, you want to learn? You got to learn how to drive the raid truck or the rummaging truck. And she's just grinding gears. And
it seems to be like a little bit of character building that obviously can't go anywhere because that character is dead now. Like Denise, they were trying to say, oh, yeah, she grew up around a lot of manual transmissions, old trucks. Like,
we should have seen this coming the second that we got tons of backstory about her and all this character development. Not that they've short shrifted her any, but the fact that they really laid it on thick, we should have seen her walking right into this.
Yeah. And I think we did see something with Tara and Denise coming in the near future because they were just doing so much with the relationship.
Sure. Anyway, they get to a point in the road where a tree has fallen in, and I'm on high alert because I'm like, man, this seems like something the Saviors would do, start blocking off major intersections and laying an ambush. And I feel like that's on Rosita and Daryl's mind. They go to check it out, and they find out that it's just a rotten tree that's blown over. Of course there's a zombie under it because there's nothing that can fall under...
Telephone poles, trees... I mean, lightning kills more zombies than bullets in this universe. Lightning strikes.
It's like if a tree falls over in the woods, fuck hearing it fall. It's whether will there be a zombie under it. And the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what causes things to fall. A zombie or human, and then it falls on top of them.
I mean, what, church steeples?
Yeah, sure.
That too?
I'm sure there's a zombie underneath that. They had to clear out the zombies from hell. Well, obviously, there was a stampede at the time.
Yeah, shitloads of zombies under
that. So, and that maybe that's why it fell. Yep. The magnetism from the zombies just pulled it down.
Maybe they have their own gravity. Have we ever considered that?
Why not?
A large enough herd might be able to just create a vortex.
A singularity.
Yeah.
That's how the world will end. If you get a big enough herd together, Rick fucked them by diverting this out of the... Or maybe he saved this. If that quarry had kept accreating zombies.
Would have pulled Alexandria and the hilltop. all of it. Just
the
in.
Whole shebang. Anyway, Rosita finds a bag of airline-sized bottles, presumably by the poor sap who was walking underneath the tree when it fell.
Not taking those to the pantry.
Nope. She's doing a See, Spencer.
You want to have the honest people on the raids. Rosita?
Sure.
Shame on you. Although, I feel ya.
I think this is Spencer's doing. This is Spencer's doing. He's the original pantry raider.
Really? You don't think she's taking these back for him?
Though? No. Oh, she don't give a shit about him.
He's
just, saying,
infected her thinking.
You know, the first night they got together, he was sobbing in bed about the time he stole crackers and his mom told him what a hero he was, and then she died the next day. Uh-huh. She's like, Jesus Christ.
Yep.
I just wanted, you know, a quick roll in a sack, and now I got to play psychiatrist to this guy. So, yeah, maybe she's stealing the bottles to show him how it's done.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rosita wants to take the tracks into town because the map shows that it's clearly a shortcut. And Daryl's like, nah, man, I'm going to follow the road. And Denise goes after Daryl because that's what you do. If you follow Denise,
I agree.
Or you follow Rosita, follow Daryl, you're going to follow Daryl.
She's not making all bad decisions here.
No.
What's going through Daryl's head? I'm a little confused because I feel like the track thing should be something from his past. And there needs to be a reason why he's not following these tracks. But I'm not picking up.
It could be, because my point was you should take neither, because you're living in a post-savior world and these people, they're blockading roads and looking for people. Mm-hmm. You need to really stay stealthy, stay off the beaten track. Now, to the show's credit, on second watch, I noticed that Daryl's not really following the road. He's kind of going off at an angle. Look like, I don't know if he's following the woods, like, or following the road 100 yards into the woods, mm-hmm. or he's like kind of cutting catty corner through the woods, but he's not following the woods. And it could be as simple as, like, you just don't if the easy path, you don't take the easy path because that's where everybody else is going to be traveling and we need to stay the hell away from people, which would be smart.
That could be it. Yeah.
It also could be a nod towards their experiences in Terminus.
But that, like, I guess,
well,
but
I
find, it wasn't.
I saw how you know, I'm going to end up no barbecue, follow this track, you crazy.
It seems a little weak to me, because it wasn't really following the tracks that got them in trouble at Terminus. It was following the signs.
Sure.
Which happened to be on railroad tracks. And now if he has an irrational fear of railroad tracks, I'm a little disappointed in our badass Daryl.
Well, you know, no one's perfect.
But then he changes his mind at the end, right? And he takes the tracks back. And obviously he does that because, A, it's a shortcut. But there must be some kind of emotional, psychological reason he does this, and I just don't get it.
So there's two things I thought about on the way back. On the way, first of all, I think he's hyper alert for, as he should be, an ambush.
Uh-huh.
Once they get to there and successfully, and they don't make any contact with people, he's like, okay, well, maybe it's just a tree fell down, so I'll take the tracks back because it's shorter.
So here's the
thing. Also, that was immediately after Denise had kind of bonded to him with about the brother thing, so maybe he is just being conciliatory to make her feel better and to take it easy on her because she's, you know, this experience took a lot out of her at the town.
How about this?
Okay.
So, turns out there was a fucking ambush on the tracks, but Rosita didn't get caught up in it.
Sure.
So maybe it's as simple as there was an ambush and Daryl smoked it out and took the other route, like we said.
But they weren't going
to
spring
it on
just
one person. But why didn't they spring it on one? Yeah. Well, was it not enough to... Was not a big enough of a target, like an Orange Crush in a cooler in a car?
Well, the other thing is, what could be is that they'd captured Eugene, obviously, and were heading on the way back to wherever they're going. And it just was a chance encounter. Because, you know, Denise was also screaming.
Right. Easy to hear.
So, like, you could, you know, if they were, like, a mile away, you hear this screaming and start heading over there, and they're going to arrive just about the time where she gets shot. So, I don't know that they were necessarily staking out the railroad tracks, more like it was just happenstance.
Yeah, I felt that, too. I'm looking for explanations. And
okay.
Didn't really see one.
So that's my speculation. Eugene misses his mullet, and I got so excited. I'm like, oh, he's got a fresh fade.
He's doing it wrong. He's growing his hair into the mullet. Get rid of the mullet and then grow it out, man.
He only would look
fine with like a crew cut.
The only possible downgrade from a mullet is a comic book store guy from The Simpsons ponytail.
That's exactly what it is.
He's falling right into that classic trap.
Yeah, I say go tabula rasa on your head.
Sure.
And then grow it back out.
Yeah. No, he's on a track to gain another 100 pounds and go balding, and his transition will be complete.
He had this very same discussion that he has with Abraham here in the mirror that morning. Was like, mullet, you've outlived your usefulness to me. I needed you on the way from Houston to here.
And then he gets his rubber band out and just gathers it together to put it to
it. Right, because he might need it later. Sure. You never know.
You know, just baby steps. Baby steps towards stage two.
Just lengthen your legs on your pants.
Sure.
And let your hair grow out.
Sure. We missed the step. We missed a montage where he's wearing capri pants.
Right.
It was the intermediate evolutionary step.
Mm-hmm.
So Abraham's like, what is all this about? And I thought that they're going to get in a fight about Eugene trying to poach Rosita. And it turns out it's just a pretty, I'm trying to be a survivor versus Abraham being understandably skeptical about it. And, Eugene gives his life is like an RPG analogy,
mm-hmm.
which I guess, and he's a real life min-maxer. He has taken all of his charisma points and put them into intelligence, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? The stuff he's saying about currently being in phase two, where the world, he's adapting to the world.
Yeah.
And then at some point he moves beyond that phase with like Alexandria and kind of the way they're going now, where they start changing the world. Yeah. Not adapting to it, letting the world change them, but changing it back into what they want.
I mean, his character is an extreme version because he's taken all of his strength, dexterity, constitution, will, and charisma, pumped it all into... I don't even think it's possible to do that. Put it all into intelligence.
Yep.
And I still feel like he got shortchanged because he's not that smart.
Right.
This isn't Stephen Hawking I'm dealing with.
Making bullets is not...
There's a guy who's really min-maxed his life.
Yes.
Stephen Hawking is what Eugene should look like if he's...
For necessary reasons, I think.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Sure. He's shaped his environment and himself to match it. Eugene's his half-assed.
He's in phase three. Stephen Hawking definitely in phase three.
Might be phase four.
Maybe. He's transcended humanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been on Star Trek, so I think he has.
I mean, he survived the 24th century. I haven't done that yet. So Abraham is understandably skeptical about this survivor shit. Rosita is waiting for Denise and Daryl and's like, what took you so long? And Daryl's like, not have any of this shit. Marches right past her. Denise tries to talk her or engage her in conversation, ask her who taught you to fight. And she talks a mess about, well, a lot of people taught me a lot of things. Years from now, he'll just be a long list and a name, or he'll just be a name and a long list of names, which, I mean, I kind of guess we knew this before, but Abraham taught her how to fight.
Yeah. And she's starting a list. She's making an apparently planned long list.
And Spencer taught her how to pilfer pantries.
Uh-huh.
So she's just learning skills.
What could she pick up with some of the other survivors? What could she pick up from, like, Tobin? Cold rolling steel, I'm sure.
Building walls. Oversized Carhartts.
Right. Which, you know, might even be a more appropriate outfit for her.
Sure. Sure.
Than her typical midriff stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it'd be a bad, like, you know, just I've always maintained that one could avoid a great many deaths on this show to zombies had they been wearing a sturdy pair of outerwear.
Yeah.
Carhartts. I mean, she's upgraded to leather jacket. Mm-hmm. That's pretty I defy
someone. That's a motorcycle
someone,
jacket, right?
Yeah, I defy someone to bite through a leather jacket.
We're going to try it on lunch with Jim and Aaron.
With strong, healthy teeth, yeah. We're going to stab next week on a video feed. We're stabbing pig heads. We're biting through leather jackets.
I have an email on the pig head stabbing. So,
you know, I actually want to, because we had a surprising amount of play on that. I actually want to engage you in a discussion of how we can make that happen. Because there's a local butcher shop that I think we might be able to get something like that done.
All right.
And I've got some ideas.
Some true, like, Mythbuster style.
My main thing is I don't want to, like, just, like, wantonly waste food. I get it's a pig head, but maybe we could offset it with a donation, you know, like a bald move donation to a food bank.
You should adopt a pig.
No,
As a pet.
No.
I think so, no, yeah. Veto. Just keep it in your apartment, just out on the balcony.
So you're
maybe
suggesting I get a teacup pig and then stab it?
No, no.
What kind of Nazi
shit
is this?
No, no,
no.
Stab
man
a full-grown dead pig's head, but adopt a pig
and
to
then offset,
offset
the pig tax. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Good God, what kind of monster do you think I am?
Well,
although I'm going to be cheering when I see this baby foot in the sink later. So,
yeah, I don't know if I have a long enough podcast to fully detail that question. Anyway, we should move on. Where were we at? Oh yes, they make it to Edison's apothecary.
Apo.
I'm glad it wasn't Martinez's apothecary, because then my failure would be complete. And it seems like it's been a recent sight of a horde gathering. There's bloody fingerprints all over just that particular area, which is starting to weave a grim tale that we will find inside.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Eugene has led Abraham to a machine shop / foundry and reveals his master plan. They're going to go into ammo production, Jim.
Super smart.
I think it's because he's like, it's going to be great for trade. It's going to be great for strong defense.
Right.
I mean, he's talking like a politician here.
I mean,
he's going to make Alexander great again.
Here's the thing. I don't know why you need a huge setup to do this. I've seen people do this on YouTube with a freaking stovepipe.
Sure. No, yeah.
Cooker and a bowl of molten lead. Like,
they're greatly overestimating how hard it is to produce. Now,
right. Maybe the mass production might require.
And if they were going to machine new shell like casings, but they're
spent casings.
They're
going to
recycle that, which is what most people do. The only thing, certainly gunpowder would be fairly easy to come by or even make.
Right.
But the primers, the things that the hammer clicks down and actually makes the gunpowder go off, I don't know how they're going to. Maybe that's why they need a machine shop to manufacture that.
The firing pins and stuff? No, that's in the gun.
That's in the gun,
yeah.
But the thing to charge it
the thing that hits?
Yes.
Gotcha.
I don't know how complex, because I've never heard of anyone making those themselves. That's another consumable. Usually,
those aren't part of the spent casings?
No,
part of the bullet?
Well, they're spent, so you'd have to reload them. And you start, like, the way I understand, you start with the primer, the cap, and then the powder, and then the bullet itself, the lead.
Oh.
But, I mean, eventually, if you have a full machine shop and foundry, you could do everything. You just you know, have to get to a certain level of sophistication. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's just
go to a library.
Yeah.
I mean, shit. You'll find books on that.
Yeah.
And books aren't looted. I can almost guarantee that.
The other thing, although the easiest way to go about this, now you're not going to have, like, you know, magazine-fed guns, but you could also just muzzle load.
Right.
Like, you go to a hunting store and clean out a bunch of muzzle loaders and... Uh-huh. You're going back 400 or 500 years technology, but that shit still works.
Yeah, and you'll probably still have the advantage on people who've spent all their
full auto. If the state of the art is spears and knives, hell yeah, you will.
Also, bullets, I imagine, make great currency in this world.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, if you need to trade for food or other supplies, bullets are probably pretty valuable.
Yes. Like, that would be, like, you wouldn't have to kill for the hilltop anymore. You could just supply them for their defense.
Yeah.
And that's what you could do, and you could pretty much name your price, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Anyway, Abraham's impressed. A wild zombie approaches and is covered in a lead crown, which, I know we've talked about this a lot, but can heat fucking kill a zombie brain? Because if you pour molten lead on a brain, it's got to be destroyed.
I don't care. It was real cool.
A simple puncture can kill a zombie brain, but molten lead can't. The fuck?
I'm trying not to think about it, man. Okay. I'm trying my hardest because it was a cool scene, and Eugene's a dumbass for not realizing he can't machete his way through this.
Like, I get it. You're not the world's greatest fighter, but
Here's what we do.
Yeah.
We get the pig head. We stab it through. If that works, pour molten lead on
molten
top
lead.
And try and chop it.
I can't see anything would go wrong with us fucking around with molten lead. I saw Johnny Tremaine. I know how this ends.
Live on camera.
Okay. Abraham is on fire this episode. He comes out with the first of many great Abrahamisms, which is Eugene is pissed that he jumped in here and saved his life. And you can see Abraham, he was giving him a fair shot. He's like, strike one, strike two, strike three, I'm stepping in. And he's like, you didn't have any authority to do that. It's like, what, to save your life? You'd have better luck picking up a turd by the clean end.
That's a great line.
And I've never actually heard that one before. That's a real strong one.
Yeah.
And Eugene demands an apology, which, you know, Eugene just, he's a special kind of guy, because I remember the time Abraham laid him the fuck out.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, Abraham's not that angry anymore.
And Eugene thinks he's tougher than he was.
You're really pushing your luck here, Eugene.
Completely. His rationale for it, it's hilarious, because Abraham is getting Abrahamed here.
Sure.
His rationale of, I most certainly needed your assistance from Houston to here, but you've outlived your usefulness to me. That's essentially what he did to Rosita this last episode.
True.
Like, I appreciate the boning from Houston to here, but I don't need you anymore.
I'm upgrading.
Yeah. He doesn't see it. And I don't think the writers maybe see it. I don't think that's ever even hinted
at. That's the thing, because I don't know how. There's some kind of subtle, clever things been going on in the last few weeks. I'm not sure I'm ready to give him the credit, or if this is happening organically, accidentally.
They don't even wink at it, which is strange to me. And I feel like most of the time they do, if they know that they're doing something clever.
But they did have kind of a bit of a three-way relationship, because that was one of Rosita and Abraham's road gags, is fuck in front of Abraham. Or, I'm sorry, Eugene, so Eugene could get in on the action.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing is so Abraham kind of does a Rosita Eugene or a Rosita Daryl thing here by abandoning Eugene, who just said, I've got the knowledge and know-how to repack ammo, which you just said is an amazing idea, and now you're going to let him wander off and maybe die.
Here's the thing, though. You called it during the live watch. You said he's doing a dad move here.
Yes. That's what saves it for
me. Which is to say, okay, kid, try your luck.
Yeah.
Is, I think, what you were getting at. Yeah. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to watch you, and I'll be there to catch you if you really fall hard.
And that explains what happens later in the episode, which excusing this, that he was playing it safe by just letting him shit his pants, but he's going to sweep in before anything terrible happened.
No, you totally called that.
Okay. So they enter our power trio here. Daryl, Rosita, and Denise enter Edison's, and Daryl's worried about her throwing her oatmeal up, which is prescient. Denise is waxing nostalgic over photos of children, and damn, did they all score, because there is a fully stocked pharmacy in this Edison's joint that has me eating my words. If I ever need medicine on the East Coast, I'm looking for the apothecary.
Oh my God, he said it.
I know, it's random roll of the dice.
There's drugs galore in this pharmacy.
Sure.
It's a full-on pharmacy. I mean,
the bad news is it's basically all GNC stuff. It's like wheat protein and creatine
supplements,
and wolf urine.
Herbal shit.
Yeah, some melatonin, vitamin E.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's just full of one-a-days.
Then Denise loses her damn mind. She hears a lone walker knocking around in the closet and decides to investigate, even though the adults in the situation told her not to. She goes there, she pokes the door open and stands looking at a gaping black hole. And then she raises her flashlight. I'm like, you don't lead the goddamn flashlight? She's poking around there, finds a zombie with a broken leg who has moldered into nothingness.
Moldered. I like that word, considering the flashlight thing, because I always think of X-Files when I think of leading with a flashlight.
Sure, she's moldering.
Yeah.
She sees a crib, and I'm like, oh, God, Jim's going to get his goddamn zombie baby.
Hell yeah, I thought I was.
And you kind of sort of did, because apparently this woman...
I suppose drowning a baby...
Well, here's my thing. Why isn't that a zombie baby?
Right.
It's a mutilated, soggy, wet, but...
Here's my theory.
Uh-huh.
I think it did turn into a zombie baby, and I think the mother didn't realize that would happen, and when it did, it became doubly horrific for her, and she killed herself. So there's a scenario set up here, and this is one of the most effective and creepiest scenes in Walking Dead
all
in
that
a
hush,
long
hush,
time.
Hush, yeah.
My scenario here is woman and young child get trapped in this building with zombies all around the front, indicated by the handprints. They get in here, and the kid is screaming and yelling, and she's trying to calm him down with
my baby
books
situation
and toys, and it won't shut up. She's writing hush on the walls. Or she might have written
hush comes
afterward.
Later after
yeah,
she loses
it's like
her damn
a clear
mind.
Sort
yeah.
of thing.
Yep, yep.
So she drowns the kid to save herself, to keep him quiet. And then I think what happens here is it comes back, the kid comes back as a zombie baby,
uh-huh.
and she goes, oh, fuck, that's dark.
Huh.
And she goes crazy, writes Hush on the walls, and kills herself.
But then throws the kid. So I think, so she smothered, because you can see, like, a mother smothering her child
accidentally. I think she killed the kid again. Like,
oh,
once
so
it
she
came
threw
back.
It in a tub.
No, no, no. I mean, I think it was drowned in the sink or tub or whatever that is, and then it came back, and she killed it.
Okay.
Like, outright, and then killed herself.
All right. Not that I want to dwell on this too much, but
it's fucking
I think
creepy.
She might have suffocated accidentally, and then it comes back, and she threw it in the tub, not knowing what to do. But my
maybe,
bottom line is, why
so.
Isn't that little foot squirming around?
I think she killed it again. Yeah.
How would she know how to do that?
You can figure that out.
I guess early, but she seems like she's been there like,
I mean,
from the beginning.
If it's in there going, maybe drawing more zombies, she might need to kill it again. I don't know.
Anyway, it was pretty, it's fucking dark. Any scenario you want to spin, it's pretty bad. And it really leaves her shaken, and she retreats outside the boutique. And this is like, again, you got saviors patrolling the streets, presumably. Why, why do you want to be the lone, sad woman sitting outside with the two badasses rummaging and clearing out the pharmacy? Whatever. Daryl comes out and tries to make her feel better by saying, hey, you did a good job finding this place. And she starts talking about her brother. One thing I forgot to mention is she pilfers a Dennis name tag from the store. Apparently her mother and father is special sort of people that think it's a gag to name twin kids Dennis and Denise. Maybe there's a Jeff and Jeffina out there.
Well, it's always Sunny.
I don't want to offend anybody.
Oh, it's Sunny, Dennis and D.
Oh, but that's not as
it's not quite as
yeah
as bad. But what's D's actual name? It's
DeSandra. Me.
Is that it?
Oh, is that what it? Yeah, you're right.
I think so.
Bird Lady.
Yeah. So maybe it's not as bad. You're right.
But I know, like, Vincent, you know, you got Denise. George Foreman. It's like the extreme version of George Foreman, where all of his kids are George.
Right. That's the worst.
It seems like, I mean, you can do whatever you want with your kids, but it seems like you're setting yourself up for failure when you name them something that's going to get confused.
My parents
head.
Had a problem just remembering me and my brother's names, and they're not similar at all.
Yeah.
And you put a Dennis and a Denise up there.
It's going to be a shit show.
You're setting yourself up for your kids not listening to you.
Yeah. So... I should have known she was a goner when she started talking about her brother, and her and Daryl found common cause in their badass. Although she doesn't really put forth why he was such a badass. And I think that Daryl's being both charitable and uncharitable by comparing her to his brother. But anyway, Daryl, because I think he's in this make Denise happy mode, decides to take the tracks back, or maybe because he's flush with victory and he thinks that there's no ambush, whatever. While they're walking home, they come across another random car pileup that's endemic throughout the zombie apocalypse. And Denise spots a cooler. And Daryl and Rosita say, don't bother, keep walking. She decides to go get it. Almost gets herself killed in the process and then throws up on her glasses. It's pretty much, other than dying, the worst case scenario for...
Yeah, oh, God. I mean, I guess you clean it off on the walker
shirt.
And
I think you just put them in your pocket until you get back to base and wash them off with water.
Okay.
Hopefully your stomach acid doesn't etch the glass.
So there's something weird happening here with Daryl and Rosita, and they're like, just let it be sort of thing, right? Like, so they say it in the pharmacy. They're like, it's not worth the trouble to go take out this walker. It sounds like it's stuck. Let's just get the stuff we want and get out. Now, we know that was certainly not his attitude when they were on the road with a goddamn truck full of supplies.
Uh-huh.
Food, supplies, pasta makers.
He learned his Orange Crush lesson.
I think he did. Because then
Although,
again, he tells her, like, yeah, not worth it. Let's keep going.
Orange
got the
Crush is the reason he found Jesus. So maybe
it's true.
Maybe he learned the opposite lesson.
Is that a blessing or a curse? Do we know yet?
I think Jesus is a good man, a good person to have on your side.
Probably. Yeah.
A good entity.
But yeah, it does seem like he has learned some kind of lesson. But I get the impression that that's kind of standard operating procedure because Rosita's totally on board with it from the jump.
Sure.
So, I don't know. And I know he was trying to do Denise a favor with that Orange Crush thing back a few episodes. But
sure.
Something doesn't line up quite right.
So Daryl, so as you say, she finds a six pack that mysteriously has a orange crush. It's almost like it's meant to be.
DIY six pack.
Yep. And Daryl and Rosita dress her down, but she talks this mess about needing to do something for her, for Tara. And I'm like rolling my eyes so hard because I was hoping, I remember in the live watch, I'm like, I hope at the end of this mess, Daryl and Rosita immediately start back into, are you stupid? What the fuck? You know, yeah. Like just like she didn't say anything.
Uh-huh.
But instead, the show throws a massive curveball and shoots a fucking crossbow bolt. Daryl Dixon's own crossbow bolt.
Uh-huh.
To add insult to injury through her eye socket. And it's kind of amazing. It's so shocking. No, and like the fact that she keeps talking is... Mm-hmm. Fucking weird and plausible and
right. Wow. I thought that was well done. It was definitely shocking to me. I still want to talk a little bit more about what Denise is saying here.
Sure, her point is that Daryl and Rosita are two sides of the same fucked up, closed off coin, and they're too good and they're too smart to fall into that trap.
Right. And this stuff about like you have to take chances if you want to live. I think she means live, like quote unquote live, like have a life sort of thing, which means she's trying to take chances to get this soda for Tara. And like she's trying to have a life here, but not just survive.
You can't take chances and have a life.
You take calculated risks is what you take, not wild, ridiculous, sloppy chances, which I feel like is what she's taking.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
And you can tell
I
she misses
know.
Her family too, which is what she identifies with Rosita, sure. Who's alone. And...
Not her family, because it sounds like her mom and dad are alcoholics.
Well, she's strong... alone. Like, okay, maybe it's not like specifically her family.
I think she definitely misses her brother. But yeah, her mom and dad, she could probably take or leave.
Okay.
Do you want to talk more about?
She might inspire some strength in herself. Like she's trying to learn from Rosita or something.
I get that, but
there's
again,
a dual
you're
purpose
the,
here.
You're the town medic. Like I wish someone had made that point.
And she has enough strength. I mean, Denise has a fairly strong character mentally. She doesn't need to be physically tough like the rest of these people.
That's something like I can't believe the show fell into that dichotomy because. And I, you know, the objections that Daryl and Rosita had to her coming along wasn't that you're our doctor and what you do is important and we can't go without what you're doing for us. It was all, you've never been out there and you're not experienced and you don't. And I'm like, that's the wrong tack to take.
Yeah.
And
not everyone needs to be a fighter.
Yeah.
And strength, there's mental strength, there's physical strength, all kinds of strength in this world. And she possesses one of them. Remind her of that. And let her be that.
But you know what? I'm not even mad because the show swiftly and brutally punished the stupidity.
It did.
And it was like I was in shock. I did not see this coming.
I didn't either. Should have, but I didn't.
And the show just keeps getting more and more epic from here. It's this show completely turns around. Not that I was necessarily bummed by what it was doing. I was kind of confused, but kind of interested. And like I was intrigued by the ammo idea, but everything gets epic from here on out.
Yep.
Because the man who steps out with a small posse of guys with shotguns and rifles is the douchebag Dwight, who now is sporting a pretty radical facial scar. And he is the guy who stole Daryl's bike last season with his girl.
Anthony wrote in an email and says, I'm going to call him White because he's missing the D. I think we should call him White from here on out.
Sure.
Anthony, thank you for the nickname.
Although I just, you know, I went on record saying you can't really bite through skin if you got some sturdy outerwear.
But
so.
You can squeeze. You can
That's
squeeze.
True. There's a crush amputation.
Uh-huh.
That you're always at risk with. Oh god, that reminds me of a really terrible thing I saw on Reddit this weekend.
Nope.
No. Keep keep going. Shit, where was I at? Oh, yes.
Imagine how pissed you'd be. So this guy
Daryl
has his face burnt off,
uh-huh.
His dick mangled by Eugene's chompers.
It's not feeling
chompers,
good, for sure.
At the very least, it's going to have some problems for a while.
Mm-hmm.
this guy's got to come back with a vengeance, right? I mean, how pissed off can you get?
This guy, if I was this guy, I'd worry about Daryl, because he's got his he's got his bow back.
That's true.
He has got a hard on for killing you, and he's not going to rest until that's done.
But I'm saying, like, anger levels. He's been deformed, both top and bottom. He should be pretty pissed off.
Daryl's going to be like biting your dick off is letting you off easy.
Maybe
he's going to get backwoods medieval on this guy. Yeah, so there's a standoff, as you allude to. There's our men screaming. They'd say, look, here's how it's going to go down. You're going to take us back to your settlement, and you're going to let us take whatever and menacingly whoever we want, and that's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
And Eugene turns traitor, and at this point, I'm just a gibbering mass of, like, rage. Like, first, Denise sacrifices herself, and now this shitbag is giving up Abraham, who's creeping up from behind these barrels with... I'm like, yes, yes, Abraham's going to regulate all these guys, like,
yeah,
you know.
I was getting angry, too, at Eugene, until I realized what he was doing.
So anyway, He seemingly outs Abraham, but it leads to one of the greatest moments in Walking Dead history, where Eugene just turns into a pit bull and chomps down on Dwight's dick and doesn't let go forever.
It's like a full minute.
It's just constant panning back to him still buried into his crotch and Dwight screaming.
This is what I love. Like, when Walking Dead gets this silly and just goes for it, like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to have
it's like
him
Rick
chow down
tearing
for a
dude's
minute.
Throat out, only crazier.
And funnier, and still, like, believable and workable.
And it's Eugene with this braided mullet. It's oh, man, it's so good. And it's also...
It's truly amazing.
Above
yeah.
all else, it's a really effectively shot action scene.
That's true.
Like, it's very... Like, I love the different perspective, like, the point of views where you can see kind of, like, you got a clear idea of where everyone is at and where
and
the bullets were shooting and the use of cover. And
Eugene had given Abraham up after Abraham had already moved. Like,
yes.
Kind of getting a flanking position.
He's making his moment, man.
Yeah. No, it was brilliant. This is one of the... One of the best moments I can remember in Walking Dead, period.
And the dick bite turns into a total rout, because Abraham starts dropping fools. Rosita and Daryl pick up guns. They start dropping fools. White now is screaming, fall back. Daryl really, really, really wants to chase after Dwight and put a bolt through his brain, but he doesn't. Rosita gets him not to. He does get to reclaim his bow. And then we transition into
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Before we move.
His crossbow.
So I'm wondering what kind of audible Eugene's calling here. I could imagine a scenario in which Rosita's training has really just been all about biting dicks.
Look,
and
no good
Eugene is just following instructions.
Eugene, this is your stage two. You're no good with machete.
Ever since Abraham broke up with her, it's like, go for the dick. First thing, boom, kick him in the crotch. Bite it if you have to, Eugene.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, when you're on your knees in front of a superior force and your hands are bound, go for the dick. Although I don't think his hands are bound.
He didn't use them either way.
No, he just jaws a life, man. So at this point, the song Chapel fires up with the singer Nicole Dahlenganger.
Yeah, this is a serious
Dahlenganger
remix.
It is. And it's kind of a weird fit, because you got this girl in a baby voice singing about getting married and going to a chapel with...
yeah.
But there's also some stuff about it there. I thought it was pretty spooky and effective.
I guess I wouldn't call it a remix, a cover.
But it's also a remix version.
Oh, it is?
It's called, like, the Princess Mix or something. Mm, yeah, Shazam failed me. I had to track this down through lyrics, through song lyrics, because I Shazammed it, and it said episode 6, 14, Walking Dead. I'm like, what? Thank you. So I had to track it down through lyrics, and I found it on YouTube, and I guess it's a remix of a cover. But anyway.
Wow.
Maybe that's why I had trouble finding it. But how did it know... Anyway, let's keep moving. They make their way back to Alexandria, where Eugene's recovering from Gray's bullet and 3 inches of dick lodged into his throat.
You're not very generous on old White there.
He's just the tip, baby.
Okay. Gotcha.
So he was just biting what was available. He wasn't like, trying to hoover it up or, like, you know, having a lady to tramp spaghetti scene with it. Come on now. But he, and then this oh show just keeps getting greater because him and Abraham's serious respect for the dick bite. Eugene, you know how to bite a dick, Eugene, and I mean that with the utmost respect. And he has sincerely apologized for questioning his sis. And they play it so dead straight. It's the greatest thing. It's so awesome.
It is. It really is.
Abe then goes to Rosita and, or not, sorry, Sasha, and essentially says, "Life's too short to waste time. Even if I get 30 years for, that's not long enough. I don't want to. You know, he Aerosmiths her. He doesn't want to miss a day." And she says, "All right, Steven Tyler, come inside."
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm getting there. I just finished baking a batch of animal crackers.
Indeed. Daryl and Carol are burying Denise, which I guess that implies they went back for her because it was all the group could handle to muscle Eugene down those tracks.
What vehicle were they in? Did they drag him all the way back to the truck and then come back for Denise?
Well, you never, I guess you don't know how far along the tracks they
That's
were.
That's true. Either. Yeah.
So Daryl and Carol are burying Denise, and Daryl's hitting the bottle. Now, granted, it's a very tiny, tiny airline-sized bottle, but he's hitting that fucker hard.
Yeah.
And she says, "You were right. I knew it when you said it." What is she talking about? The fact that he should have killed that guy?
I guess. But does she know about that?
I feel like this is
that?
Another clue. This is another clue to what she's doing, and I don't quite get it. Next scene, we find out that Carol leaves Tobin a Dear John letter, and she says, I love you, and I love everyone here, and I know that I have to kill for you to protect you, because...
Oh, that's what's going on here, the killing to protect. So this is the impetus for her leaving. This is the final straw. Daryl comes back after Denise has been killed by a guy he should have killed.
Ah.
If he had killed him, he would have been protecting Denise along the way.
But it would have been a preemptive
And she
kill.
Realizes that I can't kill anymore, which means I can't protect the ones I love, and so it's better for me not to be here.
Well, it's also kind of an interesting philosophical exploration of should you just kill everyone that you meet that doesn't immediately come to your side?
Yeah.
It's a fair question. Kind of feels like that's the road they're going down.
Join us or die sort of thing?
Yeah. Essentially.
But then how do you know that they're not just lying to you, trying to get in your community, and then
they're
going to
attack
from the
inside? Well, that's what the jail's
for, I would
suppose. Yeah. But I don't know. And she says, you know, Rick exiled me, and I wasn't ever supposed to come back, but kind of life worked out that way, but I realize that's a mistake, and I'm going like I always should have, and please don't come after me. And we hear another creaking of the smoking bench. And it's a very close in on Morgan.
Don't do it, Morgan.
And I feel like he's going to have to fix the situation.
He's definitely going to go after her. No doubt about it.
What is with all the Rubbermaid trays of guns being moved around? I didn't understand what they were doing. They had like just piles and piles of guns that two people were shuffling in carts the streets of Alexandria.
You think maybe they're mounting up? They're saying, oh, there are more saviors out there. We need to protect ourselves.
So they're going to start patrols? Like, I feel like that's not the
plan. Or more guards. Like, defend the town a little bit better.
Well, the other thing that's interesting is the whole reason they took Denise on this is she says it's the Edisons is not that far. So this war band of Dwight and the saviors, and they also know about the place, which implies that they've seen it.
I think they're defending. They're getting ready for a fight.
Maybe they're having to mount up and go after him. I don't know. That's interesting, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was thinking, like, if you're wanting to up the guards on the wall, just have the guards swing by the armory. But that makes sense if they're actually going to load up the RV for war again.
Or just hand these guns out. Keep guns in your house, people. Because we might need these at a moment's notice. Mm. There might be an alarm go off, and we just got to spring into action.
Yeah, that's true.
And it sucks losing Carol at this moment, because they probably need her. Although, if she can't kill, she's useless.
I don't know what the point of having an arm... Like, everyone should be armed with probably a backup piece and a long gun, right? It's like it should be
everyone
the Switzerland
you trust,
model.
I think,
like you turn 16, and you get a gun. Keep it over your mantle, and
learn
if you
how
hear
to
an alarm...
It. Learn how to shoot a gun and bite a dick.
Yep. And preferably that order.
Right. one is more
effective.
The dick
bite's a last resort.
Right.
So there you go. That's the episode, man.
Yeah. I'm not totally at peace with this Carol thing.
Me either, but I don't think we're supposed to be.
Her just chucking deuces and heading out is not completely... they at least drew kind of a squiggly line toward it. It wasn't just a complete, like, straight line. They did some building up.
Sure.
But I feel like she went a little too far.
Okay.
With re-banishing herself now for very different reasons.
Yeah. But, you know, again, I feel like we're supposed to be unsettled with it. And
Morgan clearly is. He feels guilty. You can see it on his face.
I'm not sure what he feels, but he definitely, I feel like
it's his moralizing that caused her to leave town. Yep. And now he knows she's in danger out there by herself. I can't see a scenario in which he doesn't go out and try to find her.
Do you think there's a scenario where they just walk to Earth together and they kind of go off hand in hand in Sunset and we never, like, Morgan's built a prison.
Right.
Carol arguably done more to save the group in the last two seasons than anyone, and that's just that they leave in peace and we never find out what happens to them.
That's kind of cool. If they come to some understanding where, look, neither of us are going to kill, and we both understand the implications of that,
but we still need, go, it's not good to be alone.
Right, right. I could see that. Totally.
That would be kind of an interesting evolution. So I got a tip for our listeners.
Do you?
It's just a tip.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more of a bloody stump. They should join the club. If you're like at the end of the week, like, ah, oh, damn, I wish I had more Bald Move. Well, you can go to club.baldmove.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can get several extra podcasts of content. You get access to video feeds. It's the quickest way to get any of our podcasts. You can get several hours earlier by just watching us record it. I mean, you can't get any faster than a live stream of us actually producing the podcast.
It's true.
Get access to VIP forums where you can perhaps shape the future of Bald Move. You get a lot of other premium content. Ad-free feeds, so you never have to hear me awkwardly shoehorning in the club into some kind of content that's based on the week's episode, if that's your thing. You can get all that at club.baldmove.com. And again, it's just $1 a month if you sign up for a year, $2 a month if you go month to month. And it's a great way to support our independent podcast. And if you can't do that, can't be arsed to do that, then you can, if you shop online, specifically through Amazon, please remember to use amazon.baldmove.com. It redirects you instantly to Amazon, and now your cart is supercharged with love for Bald Move. And everything you purchase on that session, we get a teeny tiny cut of, and it adds up into something special at the end of the month. And that specialness is us continuing to do podcasts. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks in advance for all of your support. And check out the club, club.baldmove.com.
Let's get the feedback. I'm entertaining some stuff here from previous episodes and some stuff we talked about.
As is your wont.
Right. We'll start off with Zach P. with some thoughts about skull penetration on The Walking Dead. He can say,
skull fucking.
As a hunter of 20 years, it's nearly impossible to penetrate bone with even the sharpest and highest quality blades.
Really?
When processing a deer, we use an electric reciprocating saw with a wood blade to cut through bone. And when cutting off limbs or tails, you still need to get your knife blade in between bone joints to be effective.
But we're talking like femurs and shoulder blades and ribs and I figured a skull would be something different.
So stabbing a skull would be akin to stabbing through a 2x4 board. While technically possible, it would require Gregor Clegane level strength to penetrate.
Holy shit.
Much less make it look easy. So, I don't know.
Seems
sounds
like the
like
pig
he's
might
got
be a fool's errand then.
This is yet another AMC Physics remix. They do love their physics remixes.
Well, you got the zombies, you know, they're the standing remix, so why not?
Mushheads. I think we should call them mushheads from now on, because that's what they are. JTB says, I just got my girlfriend to start watching The Walking Dead in this past year, and she is getting into it. So last night we started the show at season 1. Wow, does everyone look young. I've never rewatched the episode, so although I know what happens, some parts I forget. What really got me was the zombie actions in the first few episodes. In the first 2 episodes, zombies do actions we never see again, like trying doorknobs,
climb a fence,
picking up rocks, climbing fences. And he had forgotten all about the actions, and even his girlfriend said, I didn't know they could do that.
That's one that I covered in my book that I did for the first season and haven't quite got done to finishing for any of the others. But yeah, it is shocking to go back and see the Darabont era zombies.
Yeah.
And what they were capable of versus now.
Yeah, he questions, like, should they bring back these smart zombies? And I honestly think the show has moved past zombies as the threat. It's more of like a sideshow now. I don't need smart zombies. I need smart survivors is what I need.
It would have been interesting to, because I think one of the things you could say is that the the more fresh the zombie corpses, the more it might have those echoes of life and be limber and whatnot. And it would be cool, a variety to kind of like, you know, you have to treat different zombies differently.
And they kind of do that. I mean, they're getting more decayed looking, but their capabilities just fell off a cliff.
Yeah. But it's weird now because, like, when you watch Fear the Walking Dead, the zombies kind of look like season one walker, where they're just kind of like have a pallor to them, but they're
freshly dead. Yeah.
But even recently dead human zombies on this show tend to, like, instant decay.
Right.
Like, they look way, like I'm thinking of, like, Denise. Or not Denise, I'm sorry.
I think it was John or Deanna. David or whatever last episode didn't, which was kind of cool. He just kind of looked like a dude with a little bit of gray makeup on.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I was thinking Deanna looked a lot more corroded than I would have thought she would have. Of course, she'd been walking out in the woods for like 2-3 weeks, too.
Right. Considering what the show looks like, let's move on to Jill's email. I have a question for you that I don't think you've ever discussed in the podcast. My son began watching Walking Dead now that he's old enough. We have been watching it together so that we can talk through some of the themes, and we're watching it on Netflix. After the third episode, my son asked me how old the show is, and I explained that season one came out in 2010, and he was surprised because he said the quality of the film was so grainy and old-looking, he thought it was much older. She goes on, this is something I often think about when I'm watching the show live. I'm watching on a fairly new HDTV, and the quality of the picture always feels grainy and like it was recorded in an old VHS tape and left to sit for a few years. Do you think that this is a choice by the show creators to reflect some sort of genre? I think it partially is. I don't know how much of that is true today, but I know that the pilot and a lot of the first season, maybe the entire thing, was shot on 16mm film specifically for that reason. It gave them like this grainy kind of look that worked really well with the makeup, and so they were able to do a lot better effects that way.
Yeah, it looks like they're still, because I looked up, there's this article about the film stock that they're using for The Walking Dead, and they're talking about using a tungsten balanced film stock, a particular type, and I thought, well, maybe they switched to digital, but even as late as 2015, they're still shooting it on 16mm,
gotcha,
which gives a natural gritty look, so...
Yeah. That's why, because so much, and especially if your son is watching like YouTube and stuff, like so many people are shooting on digital where it just has this crisp, clean look to it.
Yeah, and apparently that's also something to help the zombie effects because it hides some of the sins that latex seams.
Yep. Clearly, we were looking shit up and not listening to what I was saying because I just said that.
Oh well, sure. Yeah, no, I was reading as you were talking. Sorry.
I know. Melissa says, I was wondering if you could address your feelings about the people for whom this world is becoming too much. Tyrese, Morgan, and now Carol. Why are these people made out to be pathetic and weak? To never be comfortable with the state of the world as it is now shouldn't be shameful, I believe, to not want to kill. If someone is not a mass murderer now in the normal world, why should they want to be then?
What?
If someone's not a mass murderer now in the normal world, why should they want to be in the zombie apocalypse? Want be the operative word. Make no mistake, Rick and his group are now officially mass murderers. They attack and kill. I would personally never find it acceptable, even in that world, and I would rather be dead than live there. I identify with Tyrese and hated that he was considered weak. And she goes on, and I think this is...
But that's the thing, like...
Worthy of reading, because she's apparently taken a lot of shit. She says, you don't have to necessarily read this on air. I've been virtually ridiculed in the past for voicing my opinion on this subject before. It seems the vast majority of watchers are on board with him being terrifying, and are not getting the message that I believe the writers have been trying to convey, that they are now killers and should not necessarily be a desirable thing in any world. I think we're supposed to see them and their downward spiral as sad and depressing, but no one does, it seems. So if either of you happen to agree and think this topic may be worthy of discussion, that would be awesome. If not, thanks anyway. Yeah, I think it's particularly relevant this week with the stuff that's going on with Carol leaving because she can't kill to protect those she loves. I guess I fall into that trap of kind of just saying, you know, it's a changed world, and like Eugene, you should let that world shape you a little bit. Now, maybe they've gone too far. I don't know. I think Morgalizing aside, Morgan's point is valid in the church last episode. They don't necessarily have to go out and attack. I think it was probably smart if you want to defend your community, but it is a shade of going a little too far.
Well,
I think her point is taken. You know, we need to at least think about it. I think the writers are.
The logical conclusion is that the emailer would not be alive in the zombie apocalypse, or at least not for long. And if you're fine, she even says, I'd rather die than become like that, that's fine. That's a choice. But I guess I'm from the school of thought, and I don't know if I could. I mean, that's like saying I'd storm the beaches of Normandy. I don't know. I mean, I could be dead, too. I'm just saying that I feel like I'm more inclined to choose life. Now, there are things I wouldn't do. Like, I would hope I wouldn't kill, like, innocent people. But there you start getting these gray areas where...
Who's innocent? How do you determine that?
Yeah, and you know, especially when you have people that are feigning to need help and taking advantage of people's human emotions to take advantage of them. I don't think it's black and white.
It's not. It's a moral choice, I think.
But, yeah, I feel like you're supposed to ask those questions. That's part of the few charms that the show has is, like, you know, what would you do? Where would your line be?
Right, but I think she's also correct in saying that most people aren't thinking about that at all. They're just saying, yeah, go get them. Fuck them up.
Well, I mean, I'm guilty of that because when someone acts in what I would call a 21st century humane, civilized manner, I say it's dumb. And I think I'm justified saying that. If you take the primacy of life, if you're saying that living another day is the most important thing, mm-hmm. You know, but even then, it's not really because, like, you know, maybe like for Rick, let's take Rick. Carl living another day is more important than he himself living another day. Mm-hmm. And several other people living another day might be more important. But the fact that the life itself has a primacy that, like, this, it's special and it's sacred. It's more maybe precious now than it was before when, you know, death usually was, you know, nowadays, like, you either live until you face a natural death, and even then, if you have a natural death that's too young, it's seen as tragic, or you meet what's literally called a tragic end.
Yeah.
I mean, that's most people, you know, don't come to end by violence or accident. It's, you know, you live a certain time and you die.
Right.
I don't know. It does change the equation, and it's fine to ask all those questions, but, like, I guess I don't understand why a person would be defensive about it one way or another. Because if you're...
Well, it's because it's not... I get where she's coming from. It's not an opinion she sees expressed a lot. It's not something that people seem to care about.
I feel like for the especially American audience's ideal, that you do have this primacy of life, and that my life and the lives of those important to me are more important than strangers' lives.
And right, so but there's also like most a glorification people... angle, and I feel like that's also where she's coming from. Like, look at a Scarface, look at a Godfather; those are glorified examples of violence being.
I guess that's true.
It's glorified violence, right? Sure. I mean, people cheer those characters on; they don't go, "Look at what a bad guy he is." They get behind those characters, and that's what the internet in general, the general viewing audience, seems to be doing with these heroes. And because they're being portrayed as heroes, even though they're committing these acts.
But they are heroic.
I don't think the show is doing enough to maybe impress upon us that this is not the best option for anybody.
Is it the best option in zombie apocalypse? I mean, I think that's what they're trying to say, is that Rick's group is kind of the best case scenario for a survivor.
Right.
It's not the best case scenario for a non-survivor. It's the best case scenario for a survivor in the zombie apocalypse.
I'm playing devil's advocate here because I mostly agree with you.
Because I also think
what it takes to survive.
When you talk about Godfather and Scarface, I feel like it's a weird sort of high road argument to be like, oh, it glorifies violence. But, you know, the thing about those movies is usually it's glorifying violence of criminals, like bad criminals against worse criminals.
So it all ends badly for them. No one in those movies makes out.
Yes, which is why I enjoy shows like that, but I don't like things like Saw and Human Centipede, where it's just violence and gore and death for its own sake, and there is really nothing that you can root for.
Right.
So, I don't know.
You can root around in someone's guts and find a key.
You
do that.
You certainly can.
All right, moving on. Anthony P. says, so because she feels bad about killing, she's going to run off into the wild where she will have to undoubtedly kill to survive? Talking about Carol. No, I think you're misreading that. The only reason she's leaving is because she can't kill to save the people she loves. And if she can't do that when she needs to do it, she'd rather not be around.
And like that's what
I'm saying. Like, she's doing more harm being unable to kill.
And she will not kill. Like, she'll be exactly like Morgan. We saw how Morgan rolled.
And she knows that that's a huge mistake, but she's somehow compelled to follow in his path.
He's not going to... He and she are not going to let you take their lives, and they will take Batman-type
measures. I guess that's
measures.
The problem I have, is... Carol realizes the mistake that Morgan is making, and she's making it herself.
I feel like she's coming around to saying, you know what, Morgan, I think that we're supposed to understand that she's organically come to the conclusion that Morgan's right. That he is choosing the best. Like she's got the enviable freedom of opting out. I don't have a child to worry about. I don't have a lover that depends on me. I am a single solitary, and I can just opt out of the scheme. And I can maybe protect my own life, but not at the expense of others.
But do you see what I'm saying? Morgan's path did not work. And she realizes that, and that's what...
It didn't work.
And that's why she says, I'm going to get people killed,
but it did,
who
it,
I love.
It didn't work in the framework of a society. It would work if you're just walking the earth.
Right, right. I guess you're right. It does lead to a necessary path of action.
Which seems like what she's taken. So I guess the more I think about it, the more I don't really have a problem. I just feel like they missed a step or two to accurately convey why she's felt this way. And I think Sam was part of it. You know, just confronting the horror of the fact that she can't even remember all the people she's killed as part of it. The fact that she was going to eat these Alexandrians alive for her own selfish end was part of it. You know,
yeah, maybe it's more nuanced than I'm giving him credit for.
No, I do think there's a piece missing, but I don't think it's as bad as maybe, you know, as did previous emailer's point, maybe we were all caught up in the rah-rah Carol's Rambo.
We certainly were, yeah.
And we don't like it that she's not being cool anymore, quote unquote.
Uh-huh. I don't know. There's also something like... Man, I don't know how to put this thought to words. Never mind. Let's keep going. Dan from Philly. Hey, guys, what? That's an incomplete sentence. Hey, guys, what could have been a good episode? What could have been
It happens, man.
Right. He's probably typing it on a phone. Got auto-corrected out of it.
Trying to organically correct people's typos that you missed when you're compiling is one of the skills.
Yep.
So you got to bite a dick, and you got to be able to correct typos on the fly.
I'm prepared for the first, not the latter. What could have been the first string of six episodes in a row that didn't make me want to put my foot through the TV? And these motherfuckers have to pull the same thing the show always does. Take a solid, fleshed-out character, have them do a 180-degree shift, and do something that absolutely makes no sense. Carol's letter in the end lays out everything good about where their lives are right now. So she leaves, which, quite frankly, just a ton of viewers are doing this year. Sure, she's killed 20 people, saved the group time and time again, has done every dirty job that needs to be done, but after a couple of Morgan platitudes, she's seeing the light. Six goddamn seasons of this and nothing changes. I wanted to leave that in there as, you know, the dissenting opinion, because I felt like the vast majority of this was... Of the Carol stuff was mostly positive.
Yeah, again, I'm not saying I like it, but... So it's interesting because I feel like that there's a lot of things in this episode I don't like, but not for the typical Walking Dead reasons of they're stupid or doesn't make sense or it's like
the
Denise
thing is the only thing.
Like I don't like Denise dying because I really liked her as a character.
Sure, yeah.
But she was in a situation she shouldn't have been in for dubious reasons, and she paid
the price. For
real
bad writerly kind of reasons. Like we need her to go out and we need her to get killed, and
my only problem was that Daryl and Rosita were objecting to her going out for the wrong reasons, and again if I'm in the writer's room and I haven't come across a compelling reason to get Daryl and Rosita to let her come with me, then I would sit there until I figured out another reason.
Yeah, I mean.
But I
could have even had.
Honestly,
her.
Though, dude, most of this clunkiness is due to another fucking Kirkman remix.
Right. Which
that,
we'll talk
and
about
I
in spoilers.
I got to go to the spoiler section because a lot of the clunkiness just comes to, I know, I'll do this and damn whether it makes sense or not. But
this Carol thing.
I think it's mostly a successful remix. It just, had to really, like Daryl Dixon, grind the fucking gears to get it to go where you wanted to go.
Right. But this Carol thing, I'm mostly with you. I think the 180 degree on Carol has been a little too severe. I think they should have gone about a 120 degree shift for her.
Well, the thing is if Carol doesn't make it back this season, I will expect that in the months ahead, we will find out that she just didn't want to come back. And yeah. And that's like sometimes you're put in that position that you got to make the, you know, a real life decision is forced upon you and you have to make the best of it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Denise. A lot of people do not like this Denise stuff. Nick W. starts out, "I'm disappointed with the way that Denise went out in this episode. Until this point, Denise was growing on me as one of my new favorite members of Rick's group. However, this episode did a disservice to Denise's character by having her go off on a self-righteous journey to prove that she is brave and can stand up with the rest of the badasses in the show." I'm not sure I completely agree with the characterization of her motives, but we'll go with it. "What Denise failed to realize is that real bravery is not just going out on supply runs, killing walkers, and knowing the best moment to bite an enemy in the dick. In this world, real bravery is knowing your strengths and knowing how you can contribute to the success and well-being of the group, despite that how that role makes you feel. Denise's desire to prove herself that she could be brave was a selfish, bullshit move that I didn't feel was within her character. Daryl, Rosita, and Denise should have known better than put the only doctor in such a dangerous scenario for no good reason. Not trying to bitch too much because I think this half of the season has been great so far, but I just don't understand why the writers can't try harder to genuinely earn these moments rather than having characters make stupid decisions like this that put them in needless danger that ends up with characters dying."
Well, no, I understand why Denise wanted to do this, because this is more about her inability to go with Tara and to say I love you than about needing to be a badass.
Right.
And also she justified in her own mind with also, you know, there's this like Mr. Rogers-esque, I'm going to help you be the best self you can be too, you know, because that's my ability. And it blew up in her face. Literally, mm-hmm. It blew her, you know, her eyeball out of its socket.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I don't think if you're going to hate it for the right reasons. And the fact that this is different than a lot of the childish, I'm going to prove my badassery. This is different than a lot of things Carl has pulled. This is different than a lot of things fucking Andrea pulled in season two. This was a different motivation. Same result, but I guess again, my biggest problem is Daryl and Rosita failing to stop her, not so much that Denise wanted to do this. Because Denise loves Tara. Point blank, period.
No, absolutely. As evidenced by her grabbing a cooler full of Cokes. Orange Crush. Nathan, just wanted to hear your thoughts on how convenient it was that right after Carol and Daryl talk about those people he met in the burnt woods, they magically showed up in the same episode. Does The Walking Dead not trust their audience to remember what Dwight looks like, or was the Daryl and Carol conversation well-timed hype?
Honestly, I don't know that I would have if
I would have recognized him
failing
visually
to remember his, you know, there's someone sent emails to me about Dwight and how we've seen a Dwight character before.
We got that a ton primed of us, yeah.
Me. Yeah. So, you know, I see those in my inbox. I don't know. And I was kind of surprised that we didn't see him in the previously ons. Because I think it's asking a lot. Yeah. I think it's asking a lot for people to remember something that happened 3-4 months ago.
Right. And I think previously on is the place to do that.
Yes.
Like, now, you don't need to write it into the dialogue of the show.
Sure. But that's also an efficient way to do it as well.
I guess.
I mean, you know, where'd you get that bike last step was starting? I don't know. I felt like, man, I'm on the unenviable position of defending The Walking Dead because I feel like some of this stuff was set up pretty sweet.
No, I think Dwight coming back was awesome. They've been doing a lot of things right this half season.
Yeah.
A lot of things. Some they get very wrong still.
Sure.
Is The Walking Dead, but they're overshadowed by the things they've gotten right, which is normally the other
way
around.
The show is watchable and entertaining now. Yeah. I'm genuinely like, I wonder what's going to happen next instead of dreading like, oh God, I got to, you know.
Normally we get like this at like the penultimate or the season finale episode.
Yeah.
We're like, man, we suffered through a whole season of bullshit, but they hooked us back in the final episode or two.
You know,
this
what?
Time it's been all the way through this half season.
You know what? They haven't done this half season. Huh. There hasn't been a complete whammy stopper. Let's go back for a whole episode and do a bottle bullshit back in time thing.
Or a reason
nothing
to,
has
to
fucked up
take
the
back
flow.
The action. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing has really fucked up the flow this season.
Right. It has been constant plot movement.
Yes.
Toward
and
everything.
And all the characters are intertwined all the time. Like even this episode, we got movement with Rick and Morgan. Like Rick was in one scene
and didn't even say anything, just
but
gave a look.
That moved that ball forward.
Right.
Like, it wasn't just completely dropped for 2 weeks.
Yep. Devin from Virginia says, maybe I'm the only one who had a problem with the opening sequence, but as a professional video editor, small editing choices really stick out to me. So Rick and I think this puts kind of a finger on why I didn't like this blur thing. So Rick and Morgan has changed the lines about the cinder block coated drywall prison, and it does a stylized fade. My first thought upon seeing this fade was, oh shit, is Morgan going back into clear mode? The blurry vignette they used for this transition looked very similar to the effect they used in the Morgan-centric episode whenever they were conveying Morgan's unhinged clear mentality.
Had Tabitha flashbacks.
Yep. The fact that they used this blurry vignette during a Morgan scene and the fact that they lingered on Rick's face made me think the editor was trying to convey that Morgan's opposition with Rick was beginning to swim him back into clear mode. Then the sequence started over again, repeating all the same scenes. I had a bunch of thoughts in rapid succession. Wait, was this a dream sequence? No, that'd be ridiculous. It'd serve no purpose. Wait, is this The Walking Dead meets Groundhog Day? What am I thinking? That'd be even worse. Wait, is this the beginning of The Walking Dead multiverse? Of course, I didn't actually consider any of these thoughts seriously. They were just the first things that popped into my brain, and I was confusedly trying to piece together what the heck was going on. Once I realized this was supposed to be a day-by-day sequence, I got really frustrated with the editing choices. I think adding a quick evening to night to morning time lapse of Alexandria between every repetition, like we talked about, of that opening sequence would have made it clear much faster that this was supposed to be a day after day montage of sorts.
Yep.
He's right on. I had all those same thoughts going through my head, and him pointing the clear effect out is obvious.
It's a deliberate misuse of the language of cinema that this show has set up. I don't understand why. Like, if I was the editor or if I was the, person that's looking at the dailies, I'd be like, what are you trying to suggest here? What are you wanting the viewer to think? The passage of time? That's not...
There's a standard way to do that in cinema
that
every audience member understands. And I guess maybe you don't want to fall into, like, some kind of cliche, but...
fuck that. There's a reason why there's 100 years of... technique that has trained us as viewers, and you fuck with that at your peril.
Yeah.
You better know what you're doing. And, it's kind of like I always said that some of the stuff that The Walking Dead was trying to do a few seasons ago was trying to get top shelf stuff and play with the, like the adult toys. No. Like, if you don't have a mastery of the medium, then you don't know when you can flaunt conventions. It's a puzzling decision they made. It's a weird stylistic choice that was bad.
Yeah. Even without thinking about it further, I instinctually didn't like it.
Sure.
It just didn't look right or feel right.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely,
But Devin really puts a fine point on it. Okay, I don't know this person's name. I only have an email for them, so I'm going to call them Beach. Says, I just wanted to take a minute to show Josh Dermott some well-earned appreciation. I'm always really impressed with his skill at reciting those very wordy Eugene lines. Then there were some real doozies in this episode. Specifically mentions the one about the game theory stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even see him take a breath during all that. Well done. Yeah. Yeah, the guy doesn't get enough credit for playing the ridiculous character that he does.
And he's one of the consistent pieces of comic relief in this show.
He is, yeah.
That the show went for years without, to its kind of detriment.
Uh-huh. All right, Eli L. says, I'm writing in to address some grade A bullshit that happened on The Walking Dead last night. You know what I'm talking about, the sudden death of Denise. Initially, I was shocked. 40 minutes in, I thought I had a handle on what the episode was, a character development episode. Sure, it was done in typical Walking Dead fashion, but I feel like it was finally going somewhere with the discussion between Denise and Daryl about their brothers, as they did something we've all been longing for, addressing their pasts. However, the writers thought it best to cut what would be the only development thread I gave a Subway rat's ass about, and boom, it was over. Once the shock was over, I realized this remix was actually a terrible one, and I was unfamiliar with this trope, so keep an eye out for it. First, as it diminished the chances of fleshing out Daryl and Rosita, and also following into the infamous lesbian death trope? Is that a thing? It's not one that I've heard of, but there are a million tropes I've not heard of. Such a plotline is neither unique or exciting as it is driven...
I've heard of the evil homosexual trope, but I've never heard of the lesbian death trope.
Okay, I guess
I just don't traffic that much in lesbian literature and cinema.
Right, well, he kind of explains it here.
Okay.
Such a plotline is neither unique or exciting as it is driven into the ground with almost every show, movies, and even games. The media is constantly telling us one thing, lesbians or any feminine person attracted to other feminine people are doomed to be unhappy. And why? What did Denise's death really serve? Shock value. Eugene and his dick bite or just a sudden appearance of the saviors wasn't enough? Was it just for tension? Denise's death, that's hard to say, was unfair to her character, one who I was really growing to enjoy and just continued to rehash a trope. So I wasn't aware of that trope, but I do largely agree with this sentiment. Denise and Tara were very quickly becoming in league with Rick and Michonne because sure. they're kind of, you know, leads. And I really like their relationship too. But Denise and Tara were really growing on me. And this is coming from
and the fact that we Tara being a character Tara that I fucking Denise.
Hated at yeah. the beginning. And I've really come around on.
That's the thing. That's a real tragedy is I felt like I would have rather lost Tara than Denise.
Yeah.
But
I think Denise had a more interesting road ahead of her.
I also feel like that, I don't know, I feel like that this, the person that plays Tara is a Matheson?
Alana Masterson, yeah.
I feel like that she has the chops to do, like, because they got to deal with this in a heavy, realistic manner. And I'm actually kind of impressed with how they're doing Rosita post Abraham as well. I don't know. I felt like did you feel like the show was intentionally using our internal tropes about it against us? Like they were expecting people to be like screaming about how stupid Denise was being, and then bam, she gets killed.
Yeah. And that's a thing that The Walking Dead has done, you know, give us a lot of backstory and then kill that character. I mean, think back to, like, T-Dog, right?
But I'm talking about, like, yes, I was making a joke about that, but I'm saying, like, specifically, do you think they're sitting in the writer's room saying, we're going to give this person some naive, anti-survival dialogue and make them intentionally kind of childish and petulant, and then we're because that's kind of what we've done, and then we're going to swerve violently out of that lane in oncoming traffic and just shock the hell out of the viewer, because that's what they did to me. Yeah, I was in I can't believe just shut the fuck up and listen to the thunk, and I immediately felt terrible. I was shocked and felt terrible.
Right. I don't know. How do you think they've done with Morgan? Because Morgan is that character. He's the guy who's kind of survived regardless of how stupid and naive he's come off as.
I don't know. It's interesting when they play against type, like in Deep Blue Sea, when you got Sam Jackson stand up and give the hero speech and then chomp. Uh-huh. Like, that's, you are expected, you're conditioned to expect a certain thing, and then this other thing happens, and it's maximum shock value. I kind of feel like they're smart enough to do that.
I really want to. I was going to say, I want to try and rotoscope a scene where Eugene bites him in the dick instead of that chomping shark. But I don't know how you could do that, because he gets bitten in fucking half.
In half, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of funny on its face. A giant Eugene coming out and just chopping him in half. It's the ultimate refinement.
Right.
It's a full body dick bite.
So I'm sorry I can't comment on the trope. I had honestly never heard of it, but sounds like it's a thing. Barry C. from the UK says, I think Dwight was using meta commentary when he said maximum impact of killing Denise, like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most economical character developments to death I've seen in the show.
And also, it didn't come out of nowhere. Like, she is steadily beginning dribs and drabs of character development as befits her station as a kind of a B-tier character.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel out of place. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is about time for her to get an episode where we find out more about her.
Right.
Whereas T-Dog got nothing but hell no, and, you know.
And then he got to punch a racist. I think he got to punch a racist.
I think a racist Rick, punched him.
Rick punched. He gun-butted a racist. T-Dog didn't even get that.
No, T-Dog got punched by the racist.
Yeah. God damn it. Anyway, he goes on, I've always liked Denise, but when she mentioned how she used psychology to pick Daryl and Rosita for a trip, I thought she had the makings of a great leader and a Walking Dead character. I literally was saying in my head that moment, wow, Denise is now really a good character. Oh, shit, she's dead.
Yep.
Not sure, but I think that means Walking Dead did some good writing there with her last season or so, rather than the usual build them up for the first time, then kill a model they sometimes follow. Yeah. I think Denise's arc was a fairly strong one. I don't really... Like, yes, it was shocking how she went out. I wish she was still around because I liked her character, and they were doing such a good job with her.
Mm.
Such a good job. Joe from Cleveland. Not going to lie, I was pretty happy to see that arrow go through Denise's head at the end of the episode.
Really?
But he has his reasons.
Okay.
Her ineptitude throughout this episode was driving my wife and I crazy.
Sure, yeah.
Then she had the audacity to lecture Daryl and Sasha about what's important and what's not after risking her life for a soda can. On behalf of myself and my wife, we'd like to thank Negan's crew for shutting Denise up. So there are varied opinions on this.
So you didn't feel suddenly ashamed at your hatred of Denise like I did.
Nope.
You felt justified and vindicated, which is, you know, perfectly fine.
Yeah. Okay, Drew E. has a question. I think a meta question about our podcast. Dumb question, but what does morgulizing mean? Is it another word for a long monologue? Was Denise morgulizing when she got a crossbow bolt through the eye? Morgulizing is a very specific thing.
Type of monologuing.
Yes, a very specific type of monologuing.
And moralizing. It's a moralizing, monologuing, morgulizing thing.
It's espousing dubious moral claims with complete authority.
Yes.
With complete confidence.
And having the second party, instead of saying, "What the fuck are you saying?" look thoughtful into the camera as if you're making valid points.
Right.
That's the key thing. You have to have a straw man that you can beat up with your bullshit morgulizing.
Right. Steven from Florida says, I don't know what's worse, the title of an episode called Not Tomorrow Yet, where you clearly see the following day in the same episode.
Do you?
Oh, you see the day.
Oh, that's true.
You just don't see it turn today.
The day breaks like a Pyrex dish launched off a 50-story building.
Yep. Or having a six-pack of Coke Zero with one substituted Orange Crush. It's not even a bonus can. Who's going to buy that? A couple episodes ago, I expressed how Carol was acting out of character after Sam's death and thought you guys had a good point on how it all started to pile up on her and thought you helped me understand her point of view. And though you helped me understand her point of view, I still feel like this new side of Carol came out of nowhere. I agree with Seppenwald's article about how the show took its time explaining to us her long six-season arc and how she became Rambo Carol, but now that's all out the window in a matter of a half season because Morgan and his morgulizing. Her talk with Daryl made me feel more for him than her, especially after seeing her defend Maggie last episode. And that's one of the things that I feel like is the biggest problem I have with the Carol thing, is they did an incredible job setting up Carol's storyline, and it was one of the most engaging storylines.
Sure.
Because it's gone back to season one.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff has had this through line that no other characters, save maybe Rick.
The others that have been there from the beginning?
I mean, maybe Rick. I don't even think Daryl's had that good, that solid of a storyline. He kind of dropped off after season four when Merle did his
He still got the stuff. You know, when we had the Pope Carol gag, when they went in that mission into Atlanta, he's had some moments and some of the stuff he did with Beth was good. Like, we got this kind of tragic, tortured story. Yeah.
Before she went to Slaptown. Yeah.
Arguably, he had enough that they needed to bring some of the others front and center, and I think they did. And
Seasons ago now, man.
I don't agree that Carol came out of nowhere. She came out of somewhere. It's just a little bit fuzzily defined somewhere. It's not quite crystal clear that they want it to be.
I guess for me, if you were to graph it, it would be like this weird biased bell curve where it slowly ramps up and then it just kind of drops off a cliff.
Sure.
It ramps up in its build up and then the climax just
so
drops off.
So wouldn't that indicate
completely.
That that's a break? She reached a breaking point?
Yeah, because
a breaking point
did.
Does not look like the other side of a bell curve. It
right.
looks like a and then just falls off a cliff.
Right. I mean,
so,
I guess so, but I don't see the impetus for that.
I know.
Is the problem.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I do feel like there is a screw loose. It's not a train wreck.
No,
I think that we want to call it that because that's the easy thing and that's what we've conditioned to expect.
But I agree. It's
not quite a dumpster fire. It's more of a burn barrel. It's supposed
to, they should just use it to make lead bullets.
It's a burn barrel. It's on fire. It's arguably supposed to be on fire, but, you know, there's probably better ways to do it.
Maybe the bits of bone shouldn't be in there.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, final email is from someone named Cecily. Says,
oh, God.
Don't know who that is. Someone says oranges have always been an ill omen. How do we not see Denise's hunt for Orange Crush foreshadowing her death sooner?
Ah.
She's right on.
Man.
I think it's a she. I'm not sure.
From The Godfather to Breaking Bad to Boardwalk Empire, and the Orange Crush has struck again.
It did.
You fuck with oranges, you're going to die, kids.
The only thing more appropriate would have been if she got crushed by a falling van or something.
What had to be orange? A Dorito, right. van.
Right. A beef-a-rino van?
Eating? A sun-kissed.
What was Tara eating during her stay? That would have been appropriate. An orange truck.
It was like, I can't remember what it was, like a Hormel, like, you know, it was whatever the generic version of Hormel was.
Right.
I'm actually impressed that they do Orange Crush. Like, that's a real brand.
Is it actually Orange Crush?
I think it is, yeah.
Huh. I know the viewers were calling it that, but that's an easy shortcut.
I thought it actually says Orange Crush.
Huh. Yeah. Well, maybe they got a sponsorship deal. Some embedded advertising. That's all I got for emails.
Okay.
So we're officially done, except for the spoiler section.
Ooh. So I guess you want to send these emails in to watchingdead@baldmove.com if you'd like to get in on the feedback game, or go to forums.baldmove.com, where we always have an episode thread. There's also a rollicking comic spoilers thread. Please keep the two separate. Do not try to grab the clean end of the turd on that. It's just not going to work.
nice.
Watchingdead@baldmove.com, forums.baldmove.com.
All right. So if you're sticking around for spoilers, they're after the music. If not, we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.
And we're back with the spoiler section. I'm going to kind of blow through these. There's a lot of, like, kind of minutiae on, like, how things have been changed up and how they might play out.
Did anyone call Denise getting the Abraham treatment last week?
I don't think so. Not that I remember.
No, I don't think anyone suspected she would get outside the walls of Alexandria.
Right. It was all, like, Tara. Like, sure. Who do we know that's out
People
there?
People that we know would actually go scouting, not the one medic you've got.
Right. Abraham was a big contender, of course. Anyway, Daniel B. starts off. He has some details about this. Dwight is indeed the same man who stole Daryl's crossbow and bike. I wanted to put something in there because...
Sure. I fucked that up.
You know, we both fucked that up.
And now that he's got a scarred face, we know that he's the same Dwight from the comics.
Exactly.
Because he's got a whole backstory about that scarred face.
I think we debated that in the spoiler section way back when we first saw him.
And also,
but I forgot his name was Dwight, honestly.
Yeah. So, you know, if you've read the comics, you can see how he's going to plug in. And, you know, the fact that his girl wasn't with him and what all that implies with Negan. And
yeah.
What's interesting is that maybe Dwight was this big of a shitbag in the comics. I guess he was, since he killed Abraham and we hated him for that. But, you know, he kind of takes a face turn, no pun intended, towards the end of the All Out War arc.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see, because he's such an arrogant, cock-bitten dickbag that it's hard for me to ever think that he can be trusted at this point.
Cock-bitten as an adjective.
Mm-hmm. Once bitten, cock-shy.
I would be. I would
Hell
be
yeah.
worried. I would
have
keep...
trust issues. You'd have trust issues. Someone bites your dick. Broad daylight.
At the very least, no more hostages at crotch level.
No.
You take your hostages standing up, goddammit.
I'm putting the one of those dog collars on everybody I take hostage.
Right.
Good luck trying to get to my dick from that.
All right.
In that radar dish.
Daniel goes on. Dwight and his wife were definitely on the run from the Saviors in the episode Always Accountable, as opposed to some other group, like Aaron was speculating. I think you were... I don't know if you were actually speculating... like during the main cast and pretending not to know what you knew.
It's a little column A, a little column B.
Okay, that's the impression I got.
Because I didn't want to trot out Savior. I didn't want to, like, you know, but on the other hand, I also thought it was a bit early to get into that. And the thing is, it'd been so long. If I had read it and had the Dwight right at my fingertips, I probably would have cottoned on immediately.
He goes on, they kept saying stuff like, we're not going to kill just for a roof over our heads. At the end of that episode, they returned to Negan. Dwight got his face burnt and wife taken from him as punishment. The actor who plays Dwight tweeted, and since deleted, that he was returning for season 6, episode 16. Spoiler alert. We are in the spoiler section, so if you didn't expect
someone's
that, shame on you.
Someone's going to get his face burnt in real life. Kirkman's going to hold that iron...
It's easier for us on a production level. Uh-huh. They cut our budgets. We're just going to do this.
Well,
Dwight.
Plus, you know, don't tweet. Don't tweet, genius.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to justify it. This is not, I'm not punishing you.
This is just, you know, Greg Nicotero's got enough
make
work
sacrifices
to do with the zombies.
For your craft.
Sure.
No doubt he's returning to put an arrow through Abraham's head. I don't know. I think this was written before Denise got the arrow through her head. Mm. But how could it be? Because Dwight was in this episode, and that's why we're talking about him. So I don't think they're going to do that again.
No, I don't think
that you go... That would be ridiculous.
I guess, and that's what I'm saying. Like, this remix, once they decided it was going to be Denise, you can see all the things they had to do to make that happen. And I don't understand why... The first thing out of the people's mouths when Kirkman says, I know, let's have him shoot Denise, should have been like, why is Denise out there in the first place?
Uh-huh.
This doesn't make sense.
It doesn't matter. No one will expect it.
Well, that's true.
It's so stupid.
That's true. And to do, I mean, I swallowed it. I choked it down.
Yeah.
Like 3 inches of Dwight dick, I choked it down.
He says also that Abraham went out just like Denise, like kept talking for a second after... Got shot and then collapsed.
Very cool.
He goes on. Number three, it also appears that the setup to this whole cheesemaker / all life is precious storyline to somehow convince Rick to spare Negan's life. Yeah. I mean, that we've talked about that with the whole cell being built and all that stuff. And he says that they didn't really have a reason in the comics not for Rick to just kill him. Straight up.
Might be, because I now remember built it up. Yeah. I remember when we jumped forward and he was being held in the prison, that was a little bit of like a what the fuck, but then I guess it makes sense.
Now this, it really makes sense.
Arguably, they're doing some things, I think, superior to the comics. And also, it sounds like that we were right in that Kirkman was going to zig on a zag with the Abraham. He said he regretted getting rid of the soldier during an all-out war plot, and he's, you know, got to have a soldier. He's good at ghosting hostiles, living and undead.
He also corrects us. The trucking company was definitely a trap by the wolves. Aaron confirms that in the show when he says leaving his backpack in the car led the wolves to Alexandria.
I'm not talking about that trucking company. I'm talking about the fuel delivery company that Dwight and company were trying to get back to.
Right.
That wasn't a
wolf trap.
I think
maybe we talked. I think maybe I said something.
Yeah, you got two trucking. Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. I can see where people get confused.
Right. Number five, there's not a chance in hell the show will catch up with the comics. He says, you know, they do 12 to 15 issues of the comics each season, which we had a calculation. We had an actual calculation, and I feel like you're just guessing, Daniel. He says 12 to 15. I think our emailer last week said 18 and a half or something like that.
Comics per year?
Yeah. But if you think about it, okay.
I think a comic is roughly the space between commercial breaks. It is not an entire episode. It seems to me that like a comic's worth of action is about 15 to 20 minutes of screen time.
Well, they did like arc to arc stuff and how many comics each arc covered and how many seasons each arc covered.
Well, I mean, if they're gonna, like I said, like, I can't account for them pumping the brakes on stuff.
Okay. Ultimately, it doesn't matter if the show... Whatever. I don't care.
I don't
if the
either.
Show catches up with the comics, don't give a fuck. Yep. They're going to write the show how they want, and I think it might help them if the show caught up with the comics, frankly, but it doesn't really matter to me. Alex M. says, I'm a non-comic reading spoiler listener, and I would like some clarification on the staging of Glenn's death in the comics. I know that we're leading up to Glenn or someone being killed by Negan, but I'm wondering how it could possibly be staged in a believable way. I think you alluded on last week's podcast to it happening in or around Negan's base or settlement, but I'm wondering how Rick and company would just stand and watch as someone in the group is being beaten to death without fighting or trying to stop it.
Well,
I think just like we saw on the tracks today.
Imagine that, only no Abraham
right
in the bushes.
And more guys to back Negan up.
Yeah, and Rick doesn't expect that he's going to beat this guy's brains in until it's already too late. And he says like that Negan's kind of like, you guys can sit here and watch this guy die, or you can all die.
Yeah. No, I think it'll happen. Just
and there's
the
like,
same
I think
way.
He might even say something about Carl, like, and then I'm going to go back and I'm going to. So it's like, fully believe the situation happened, and it was horrific. And I, someone posted the whole sequence to Reddit last week, and it's, if anything, worse than I remembered, because I didn't remember a kind of Glenn rallying. After he gotten a couple whacks at the head and how bad that was, it was pretty horrific. Pretty. It's interesting to see. I'm very interested to see how they handle this in a way that's going to fly on basic cable.
Yeah. So we have another Anthony B, not the original Anthony B, different one. Says, I know you guys said no more Negan back questions, but with Carol leaving so close to the end of the season,
this guy said that. I'm entertaining all comers.
And yet here I am reading another one because I think it's worthwhile now that we have a lot more stuff up in the air. And you guys said no more bat questions, but with Carol leaving so close to the end of the season and so recently after Dwight attacking Rosita and Daryl, do you think that Carol might get captured and she will be the one to get the bat? Or, my own little point of interjection here, Morgan, if he goes after her.
I kind of think they're both going to get captured. But
one of them is going to get the bat. Potentially. There's still Tara and Heath out there. They're also in danger.
And the hook, if I recall correctly, is that Rick and company mount up to go retrieve them. And then that's when Negan... So it's like the people that get kidnapped are not necessarily the ones that are going to get the bat. It's the rescue party. So if, you know, Glenn and Maggie are in that... I don't know. I feel like that he's... Man, it's... I got to give credit where credit's due. Kirkman with his jackass spoiler baiting has made it to where I really am uncertain who gets the bat. Just like with the potential of the Abraham remix, when he left Dwight or Eugene, I thought that I was expecting to see him get the arrow because they separated the party, yada, yada. And then when Denise got it was genuinely shocking. So like Kirkman being kind of an asshole spoiler baiter has me very unsure about who's getting the bat. And it's going to be a shock almost. Like, even at this point, if Glenn gets the bat, it's going to be a shock, even though that's exactly what happens in the comic.
All right. Jackie L. essentially says that. They might be, you know, specifically leveraging these things to subvert comic readers' expectations and even viewers at this point. She says, however, this last episode would seem to confirm that they are indeed deliberately and specifically playing with the comic readers. Having Abraham and Eugene out on a run and acting out their comic storylines at this point in the plot, they knew readers would be waiting for an arrow to erupt out of Abraham.
Yep.
Then they pulled a cutesy switcheroo and poor Denise got hers instead. I'm wondering if this is perhaps a nail in Glenn's coffin. They couldn't possibly be planning to run this gambit a second time so soon and have some other characters meet Lucille, could they?
But that's what, like, you could say the same thing about Glenn's fake death. Like,
right.
Every piece of evidence, the way they've carefully constructed this House of Cards shit, can be used as the affirmative case. Like, I really don't
know. Right, and that's her
know.
Point. It's like, she's with you. She's on board. And
I feel like that, again, I called, as everyone knows, Kirkman a raging, megalomaniacal asshole for the being cruel with his fans. I'm starting to think maybe that's a rational reaction to the way spoilers are discussed on the end. You just put so much chaff out that... You know, the spoiler-seeking missiles don't know what to lock into.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like, what if every show just leaked 7 contradictory stories about what's going to happen? And then you go with the 8th one that's really going to happen. Like, who knows?
Right. So that's it for spoilers. That's all we got. It was a fairly quick spoiler section, but...
I'm very entertained with The Walking Dead this year, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
I mean, I do have some big problems with character motivations and silly stuff, but it has been entertaining, which I feel like season 5, season 6, were really lacking.
It's the best Walking Dead we've had in years.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
And also, it's almost impossible for me to see how they fuck up the ending. Because whatever they decide to do is going to be shocking and amazing and wanting you to know or leading you to ask what the hell is going to happen next.
Yeah.
So.
And we're what, 2 episodes left?
Yep.
15, 16?
Yep. Happy to eat crow on this.
Yeah. And it came at a much needed time because we had a lot of discussions about whether or not we were even going to cover it. We cut our coverage back because, well, a couple of reasons. But A.
Just to put a shot across Kirkman's bow.
No, but that was part of it. Just the show wasn't living up to what we wanted, and we weren't having fun covering it.
And people were saying, your show's starting to suck because you guys hate it so much. I'm like, yeah, you're kind of right. What do you do?
There's not much you can do except cut back coverage and hope that helps. Have a good season. Hope that helps. I think it's going to help. I legitimately am enjoying watching the show again, whereas the first half of this season, I was way out of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't invested at all.
Yeah.
So glad to see it back to some kind of form.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what it'll be interesting to see what if and when there's a rebound for next season for like the viewership and whatnot, because if it gets, because I remember, like, you know, I used to be a big ER fan, and you know, you get around season 6 or 7 and like people stop watching it, and then you start getting NBC with the ER is as good as it's ever been. Critics are saying it's back, it's blah. And I'm like, sure enough, they wrote me back in. Yeah. And I watched for another season 2, stopped watching. But I could see AMC, instead of like the serious, like, oh, Walking Dead is right up there with all of our other prestige dramas, like maybe they're just like, it's back. Like viewers and critics
admitting that it was kind of like, bad, like, but not really.
That's the way to rehabilitate the bread. Like, you know, viewers and critics agree, The Walking Dead is as good as it's ever been. It's which that's damn it with faint praise, but it's back,
right?
You know, maybe that's what some of the spoiler shit that people are complaining about on Monday nights. And it's going to be egregious. Like, I can't believe less than 24 hours after it happening, I'm gonna be watching Better Call Saul tonight, and I'm gonna see Denise take the crossbow through the eye socket. And, you know, like we've been talking just how what a fuck you that is for people that are DVRing or haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The interstitial.
Even though that like maybe there's 3% of the audience that watches Better Call Saul live, right, but saves the DVR. Like, that's got to be such a fuck you to them.
They're going
to
see the dick bite. They're going to see
the they're going to get the dick bite. They're going to get the crossbow. And they're going to get Daryl hobo back, you know, have her hobo pack on her shoulder and leaving the Alexandria.
Yep. Oh, well. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back next week with hopefully another great episode. I can't see how they steer it down
into
the gutter.
I feel like this next 2-episode stretch is going to be epic.
I hope so. But, yeah, we will see you then. Thanks for listening.
All right. See you. Bye.